now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to The Game with me, Gabriel Marcotti. It's our final show of the season. Joining me are Alison Rudd, Rory K. Smith, and from beautiful Mortlake, it's Matt Dickinson. Before we begin, an announcement available this week at a small price or free to subscribers. The Times and Sunday Times Football Opus, which will include match reports from every game and every competition and some of the best of our comment and analysis. What a better way to remember this incredible season. And of course, the Sir Alex Ferguson's last season as well. I'm sure there'll be plenty of there on him. Right, Skinner?
Yeah.
Skinner's nodding. There you go. Head to thetimes.co.uk for more info. Later, we'll be picking out our team of the season, but we'll start with the Wenger Trophy, a.k.a. finishing top four. Newcastle and Arsenal, the Wenger Cup secured once again, Dicko. I don't think there's too much to talk about in the game itself, but I want to start actually with something that for so long the narrative was, oh, Arsenal, they're a bit flighty, a bit effete, a bit Euro. Defensively, they've turned into kind of a powerhouse. And while everybody kind of laughed at Mertesacker because he's tall and he looks funny, and Koscielny because he's not Vermaelen, those two guys have a tremendous defensive record.
They have, and that's been no doubt been part of the surge that's taken them to fourth. It was a bold move dropping Vermaelen. I've always thought he was a better defender than he so often appeared playing for Arsenal. Maybe the evidence of the last couple of months is he is overrated, and that, you know, Koscielny and Mertesacker are just simply more effective. I'm reluctant to come to that conclusion because I think Vermaelen, there's a player there, but there's no doubt Wenger made that big call and it's paid off. He took the goalie out of the firing line, and again, I think Chesney's got great talent, but he needed taking out. Wenger made some big bold calls, and he deserves credit for that, no doubt about it.
Does it feel weird to you that after years of praising Arsenal for their wonderful attacking prowess and so on, right now, defending is arguably the strongest part of their game, despite the fact that they don't have that hard defensive midfielder that we've been talking about for so many years that supposedly was the answer to all their problems. And they don't have a Roger Johnson at the back, which supposedly was the answer to other problems. And, you know, you had an issue at right back all season and at left back for half a season.
It doesn't feel weird at all. I mean,
it's par for the course.
No, I don't know if I agree. Really, I think the most crucial element to any team is getting your triangle at the back right, and when they haven't got the goalkeeper right, that puts enormous pressure on your central defensive partnership. I agree with Matt. Vermaelen is a beautiful and elegant defender, but Wenger couldn't find anyone to partner him. So, for some strange reason. Reason. Two defenders who are independently okay together are fantastic, and they have, for the second half of the season, they have been the defensive partnership of the season. So that's crucial. I don't think that's odd. He found that. That's great. I think they always play two in front of them. Arteta isn't your big, tough, hard man, but he's been there most of the season And I think he does the job really well. His distribution is good. His defensive work is good. He doesn't have any. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't pull up trees, but he's not flaky either. So I think what he's done is he's had to sort of compensate for having a slight goalkeeping crisis, and he's made it work that way. And it feels quite fluid, and the ball gets forward a lot, and the creative players, those three, whoever chooses behind the striker, they work. It works. I think it's quite fluid and doesn't need too much tweaking.
They've had to overcome, I think, a huge amount compared to recent seasons, no?
Well, they did, but I mean, say half of those, at least half of those things you listed, are probably self-inflicted, aren't they? I mean, half of the contractual.
Yeah, but you still, but they still had to overcome them.
No, but
you see what I'm saying?
Like, it's part of good management, isn't it? I mean, the Walcott thing, you know, as his form recently shown, I mean, that was just nonsensical that they ended up basically having to pay extra to re-sign their own player. I still think they've got issues. I mean, that, you know, that they still have to overcome. They may have overcome them by coming fourth, but that's, you know, that we shouldn't be sort of, you know, there shouldn't be a time for fireworks and champagne. I mean, the fact is, to, you know, up front, I still think they've got issues. Giroud's, you know, I don't think, I'm sure hasn't convinced any of us of the, certainly not a goal-scoring number nine. Podolski, hit and miss. You know, I think they're still at least one top-class striker away from moving up from fourth. I still think, obviously, until Wilshere can just play through a season without everyone in a jitters about whether he's going to break down every 5 minutes, you know, there's an issue there at the heart of midfield. So, you know, I think, you know, they have overcome a number of issues, many of them self-inflicted, but they haven't. But yeah, these are problems that still need solving. This is a huge summer for Arsenal. There's all this talk, obviously, about the 70 million quid, and it's going to have to be spent very well if Arsenal are going to make significant inroads into the top two and three.
Technically, that is a £70 million war chest. That's the correct collective noun for a group of millions of pounds. In the same way, it's a gaggle of geese. It's a £70 million war chest. You have to refer to it contractually as a war chest.
And it will be a transfer splurge.
Oh, it will be, yeah. Or spree, potentially a spree, depending on how quickly they do it.
Alison, please rescue me from the cynicism of these wizened old hacks here. But, I mean, Dico touched upon it. They obviously need to sign people. I identified as another striker, as somebody who needs to come in. Where else would you be looking at?
Strike a goalkeeper, definitely, and spend big and exciting and go for it. I think that's the big thing with Arsenal, and it's the thing with Arsenal fans. And you made a nice list there, Gab, of all the things that they've had to overcome at Arsenal. One of the biggest has been the apathy and antipathy of the fans, who generally have, for the first half of the season, were leaving around the 60th minute. They started to leave. They booed the first time a pass went astray. They have not been on board. There was the whole, you know, we've had enough of Wenger, thank you very much, what a great statesman of the game, but we've had enough, we need, you know, we need someone new. That's the big thing they have to overcome, is becoming a unit again, where the fans think, yeah, Wenger's the right guy, we've got him. And it's where does it balance out? Does Wenger think, I know the fans want me to sign a headline act, that's not me, but I'm going to do it anyway? Or does he try and convince the fans that he's, if he has 70 million quid, he's going to spend it the way he wants, which I think instinctively would not be to go for a headline signing.
But you don't have to go and get Edinson Cavani for 50, or Falcao for 50 million quid. You can go and get Stevan Jovetic for, what, 25, 30? And that is he's a young player, so he fits the profile. His wages wouldn't be enormous, so that keeps within Arsenal's structure. But he is of that level of quality that Arsenal just don't have. And I think what Wenger... Most of Arsenal's players are okay. Like, you look through that side and you can't sort of say he's a bad player. There's no obvious, like, really weak link at Arsenal. There's places they need to improve. But it's Wenger's refusal to accept that the players that he has are essentially kind of just good, fine footballers. Whereas if you looked at Chelsea, City and United, they've got two or three, at least, top quality players. And Arsenal, I suppose you'd say, what, Cazorla, Wilshere if he's fit... Maybe, but they're not on the same level. You know, Santi Cazorla, it sounds like a stupid parallel. Santi Cazorla's not David Silva. He's David Silva's. He's like the second choice David Silva. Arsenal need two or three players of.
You think Cazorla's that far behind Silva?
Cazorla's had a better season than.
Yeah, Silva's been poor this season. I think Silva is a. I mean, I'm going to go with Vicente Del Bosque as my guide and say that David Silva's a better footballer than Santi Cazorla.
Hey, I agree with Rory on that as well, because there's a sort of talismanic, you know, sort of quality about the players. He sort of needs to bring in, partly just to change the mood. I mean, you know, Arsene Wenger said yesterday something about, oh, the spirit among these players is the best I've ever known. Well, you know, but is it really a sort of winner's mentality? Is it really a, you know, that we've talked, I'm sure, often on this about, you know, this idea that if you sort of spread the word that fourth is fine, then, you know, sooner or later you're going to slip below fourth. And I think there's something about those signings this summer that clearly they need to be talent. They need to improve the team. And Rory's right. They need to sort of improve the sort of 7 out of 10 type feel about that squad. But also, I think there's a sort of belief and an ambition that needs to change this summer as well.
I think the issue is kind of that Wenger's too loyal, essentially, that what's happened is they've finished the season really strongly. They win in Munich. That's the game he's identified as the turning point. And he now has the narrative in place to say, well, you know, if you look at the way we ended the season, we were really strong. We've taken more points this year than anybody else. It's his stat. I'm not desperately certain if it's true, but it's certainly them or United have taken the most points this calendar year. You know, we're building something here. And because he wants to believe in those players, the risk is that he'll go and do what he did last summer, which is kind of augment his side rather than deliberately strengthen it. So I think I said to you before, Gab, on here, I think that it would be better for Arsenal in some ways to finish fifth and force Wenger out of that kind of that circle. But the risk is now that he's got his £70 million war chest and he will use it to buy, yeah, as Matt quite rightly identifies, more 7 out of 10 players because he wants to see the best in them. He will, in August or September, I guarantee, be saying that having Abu Dhabi back is like a new signing. And it is for 5 games.
Very simple. Nobody seems to want Wenger out anymore. But just to wrap up the Arsenal part, I'm just going to go around and starting with Alisson, of course, and asking if you were Kroenke or Usmanov and in charge, which I know is a stretch, would you say, you know what, this is a good time to change and look for a younger, a different manager?
I think Wenger's argued himself into the job again, to be honest.
So
I kind of disagree.
He's persuaded
with
you.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with Rory. I think having improved so radically and been the best team since the turn of the year.
Without Van Persie, let's not remember, supposedly a one-man team last year. Now he's gone and they actually get more points than last season.
Why shouldn't that matter? I think it matters a lot.
Right, so you're keeping Wenger. Keeping Wenger. Dicko?
Well, I'm keeping him partly because I'm just fascinated to see if he will, you know, if he can switch that mentality and that ambition, and if he can have a brilliant summer in the transfer market, because it feels like a long time since he has. You know, I'm keeping him out of sort of fascination, not out of an expectation that, you know, he's suddenly going to sort of be the miracle worker of old. Yeah, I hope he is, because, you know, who doesn't have a lot of time and admiration for him?
Are you keeping him, or would you mean? Because are you more fascinated by seeing whether Wenger can be the miracle worker of old, or more fascinated to see what Thomas Tuchel or Sammy Hippia or Frank de Boer could do with Arsenal?
I think not Hippia and not Tuchel. I think someone like Frank de Boer would be a great appointment, but I think that appointment comes in 2014. I would keep Wenger this summer, but I think it has to be his last season.
All right. There you go. I think if you keep Wenger this summer, you, with an eye towards changing though a year from now, you got to be straight up and not let him lock people into more long-term contracts, as he's already done, because, you know, you're going to want as much room to maneuver as possible next season. We have to get to White Hart Lane, where Spurs play Sunderland, and Roy, you were there.
As was Dicko.
As was Dicko. I've got to talk a little something. Actually, let's just talk about the game for a second, because I watched this and I thought, like, wow, Spurs could have been like 5-0. I mean, it was so one way. Sunderland, of course, have everybody injured or suspended because they all got themselves sent off in previous games. I'm wondering, is this the kind of game, Dicko, where when a team is so dominant, creates so many chances but fails to convert, is it one where you praise them for creating the chances or lambast them for not converting?
But I mean, they didn't miss any sort of open goals, or there were no horrors. I mean, they should have had that penalty after 20 minutes, and you sense it was one of those days where if they got the first, they would probably.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have to jump in here a second because you're talking about the incident where Gareth Bale was booked for diving, right?
Now, I am, and it was.
So my diving expert here is shaking his head. You think that was a dive?
I don't think it was a dive, and I don't think it was a penalty.
What? This, I mean,
Ditto, I told you this. I was sat next to you and told you that.
I wasn't listening.
Ditto spent most of the day yesterday trying to work out how to keep his laptop screen up. Do the hinges gone?
My hinges have gone. That's not a metaphor either.
The problem with that decision was that Mariner was too far away to give either one. It definitely wasn't a dive. The initial contact was outside the area, and to be honest, I'm. It probably was a penalty, but the way it's been dressed up as the world's most obvious penalty ever, I think, is a complete overreaction.
It is, but then it's ultimately Mariner, as Roy says, he was so far away that, you know, if he didn't see the penalty, well, fair enough. You know, he's not done very well. He's not got close enough, and he can't see what he can't see. But to somehow not see a penalty, but from 40 yards to detect from behind that this is obviously a dive. I mean, it's utterly bizarre. I mean, I do not like slagging off referees, but there are times when it's just unfathomable what sort of decision they make, and that one, I have to say, scored pretty high on the ludicrous scale, I'm afraid.
The better one was Carlos Tuella's superb diving save that somehow wasn't given as a penalty.
He turned his head the other way as he was doing it.
Yeah, but you still got the advantage. I don't think he did it on purpose, but his hand got in the way of the ball.
Law
like a
of the game, number 7A. Back me up on this, Alison. If you turn your head the other way, you can grab the ball. You can do whatever you want. You can grab the ball and pull it out of midair if you want. I have to ask this, Alison. I need you to help me here because, all right, as a Euro snob, the general narrative and watching Spurs play, especially in person, I come to the conclusion that Andre Villas-Boas has done a really good team. The team's organized, they play well, is tactically sound. I think they are better than they were last year under Harry Redknapp. However, you juxtapose that with their position in the table, and you juxtapose that with the fact that they're even more of a one-man team this year than they were last year. They're more reliant on Bale than they were last year. And I kind of start to question my own logic here. Am I wrong?
Well, what tends to happen is the lower down the league a team finishes, the more a one-man team you become in a negative sense. So Man United win the league. They are a one-man team as far as Van Persie's concerned, but that's seen as a good thing. And didn't they buy well? And aren't they fantastic for having him? Whereas instead of Spurs being praised for keeping hold of Gareth Bale and for Gareth Bale improving, and I think he's improved, I don't know, 126% over last season, that's a good thing. That is a good thing.
So I don't think
there's a dilemma, or I don't think you're undermining your own argument by pointing out that they are reliant on one of the players, world players of the year.
I found it really odd yesterday on Twitter that when the final whistle blew at Newcastle, you had loads of Arsenal fans saying, oh, happy St Tottenham's Day and all that, you know, all the stuff celebrating, and they'll no doubt get out the hilarious Mind the Gap t-shirt and things like that.
That's funny, Mind the Gap.
St Tottenham's Day is a funny concept and an interesting point when you finish above your rivals mathematically in like March. When you beat them to fourth place by a point on the final day, I would suggest that you should be slightly more concerned with making sure you stay ahead of them than mocking them for not quite beating you.
Do Spurs have... I mean, man for man, are Spurs better than Arsenal?
First 11, yeah, definitely. No question.
Anybody want to dispute that?
Yeah, no, I'd rather... If I was parachuted in to be a manager, I'd rather take the Spurs squad, yeah.
All right, so I just have to take Alison's word before that it isn't inconsistent of us to praise AVB, even though all the facts that we're pulling out suggest that...
It's inconsistent of Alison, she said, the squad. It's not inconsistent of me, because the first team is better, but I think Arsenal have more depth. I think that's what's made the difference, is that Spurs are reliant on a core of 13, 14 players.
No, Spurs have the strongest yeah. bench in the Premier League.
If you think about it, actually... So you're cocking your head. I mean, I'm assuming, remember, if Kabul and Sandro had been fit all season,
that's true.
Then, you know, some of those guys who started would have been moved to the bench and the bench would have looked more impressive. Roy, you might want to just walk us through this. You wrote a wonderful 2,000-word piece, which only a bit of it was able to get in the paper. But what happened?
What an insight into the way it works on the game.
It's Ditko and his demands for massive match reports.
All right, but let's cut to the chase. I'm sure what you're about to tell us is more interesting than your musings on Ditko and his demands for massive match reports.
The way that things generally work, yesterday was a Spurs story. Every paper in the country was lined up to do it was the Spurs-Arsenal thing, that was the one remaining issue. The journalists, Andrea Villas-Boas came into the press conference first. We spoke to AVB for about 10 minutes, which is normal post-match. And we kind of decided to hang around for Paolo because we thought it was polite. We didn't really care about Sunderland. My plan certainly wasn't to write a word about Sunderland in the paper because they weren't the story. That's nothing against Sunderland. Paolo Di Canio has an ability to make Sunderland the story, which I, if I worked in the North East, would find greatly encouraging and hugely entertaining. He absolutely slaughtered a large percentage of his squad. He called them ignorant and arrogant, said their attitude was worse than a League Two team's, revealed that he's fined 7 players in 7 days for missing training, arriving late for meetings, Craig Gardner for getting sent off, which I think is probably fair enough. He's going to fine Phil Bardsley. He said that the pictures of Bardsley in the casino covered in £50 notes disgusted him. Said that none of them will play for the club again if he can do anything about it. And generally kind of raged against modern football, modern footballers, said that they weren't taking their responsibilities seriously.
You also mentioned another player, I think, who phoned the club saying, I'm not coming in because I have food poisoning.
Yeah, it was someone.
And then
he
switched his telephone off so the club doctor couldn't ring him.
That's happened. There were two examples of that. We don't know who the players were. One player who was meant to train on Sunday, who decided he had food poisoning, then didn't let the doctor contact him. And another who just decided last week, I think, that he wasn't training and turned his phone. Not training. He was meant to have to do kind of injury rehabilitation work in the afternoon. He just left at lunchtime, and apparently, according to Di Canio, under O'Neill, that was normal. He says he's got the support of Ellis Short, that Ellis Short's on his side as he tries to change the culture at the club. But it was a fascinating insight into the way that a club works.
Now, I
would say to that, or a fascinating insight into the way that Paolo Di Canio sees a club at work. I mean, I'm struggling to believe that. I mean, there was plenty that wasn't right, certainly performances under O'Neill, but I'm struggling to imagine him permitting a culture which was quite so unprofessional, quite so wrong, to be honest. But it's interesting.
I mean, in the defense of the players and against the evil Di Canio, and I am being impartial here, a lot of this stuff happened after Tuesday. And as I understand the story, Tuesday night, they watched the Wigan game on television, they saw Wigan lose, they're like, hurrah, we're staying up. So let's go drink ourselves silly and go to the casino in Newcastle and watch Phil Bardsley fall over and cover him in £50 notes and take his picture. I mean, isn't that...
Well, that's an interest, because he said specifically at this press conference that he had told them that, you know, he will be watching them even more this week. He said, look, I know we're safe, so, temptation will be to go out and get drunk. He said, but that actually means that I'll be, monitoring you even more carefully because, this is when we need to be professional for ourselves and for the good of the league going to the last game. So you can look at it in sorts of ways. You can say, well, what does it say about Di Canio's authority at the club or what the players think of Di Canio, that having specifically been warned, they went out and obviously a number of them did precisely the opposite.
Maybe that's the issue. Maybe Di Canio's too soft. He needs to be more authoritarian. More repression.
It just raised an interesting question, isn't it? Because ultimately, I think we all sat there yesterday and the general feeling was, well, if players are behaving like that, isn't it great when a manager cracks the whip? Isn't it great when a manager puts these overpaid, Premier League bad boys in their place? That's our sort of default reaction. But actually, it's not as simple as that, because A, you've got them on contracts and they're not necessarily easy to ship. B, when you start slagging off players in public, then you never know what kind of sort of kickback you get from resentment, and they'll sit around and slag you off. So,
he only specifically named one player whose name was already out there.
It is,
right?
But clearly, this is a theme of his at the moment. It's not the first press conference where he's come out and basically said, I'm running a brothel stroke pub stroke gambling den, basically. And so, all I'm saying is that it's not a policy without its risks for Paolo Di Canio. Much as everyone says, the general reaction will be to slap him on the back and say, yeah, you put these guys in their place. It's not often as simple as that.
But can I just say, it's all far too emotive. And he does contradict himself constantly, Di Canio. I mean, he says he has the backing of Short, but then within a minute later, he's saying, I'll probably be sacked for what I'm saying. I mean,
I think you'll find that was just an expression.
No, but
it's crazy. Alison's right, because basically, I mean, we all walked out yesterday, and I mean, there is, half of us turned to each other and said, basically, sort of, it'll be gone by Christmas. That's another interpretation of his handling of this. Of Paolo Di Canio himself. I mean, if he survives long term in that job, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
All right, now time now for our team of the season. This is how it's going to work, because it's more fun if we're all disciplined and organized, yeah? Okay, Matt will decide the formation, and then each of you, we will go through via position.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
We may do the central defenders together, because it's kind of stupid to go and differentiate between two. And then where we're unanimous, we will move on. Where there is dissent, you will have a very brief period of time to make your case. And then we shall collectively adjudicate. Where there is still uncertainty, I shall decide. Matt, what formation are we playing?
It's 4-3-3.
4-3-3. There you go. All right. Goalkeeper, we're going to start with Alison.
Petr Cech. I think that's quite straightforward.
You don't need to explain it, because everybody might agree with you, in which case we can just move on.
Hugh de Lloris.
Oh, I knew you'd go foreign. Dicko.
It's quite a few. De Gea won the PFA one, didn't he? I think he's come on the second half of the season, in particular, deserves a mention. Jesker Leiner could even win the West Ham Player of the Season, I suspect. And I should think at Sunderland they're probably going to vote the keeper. And so I don't think it's as simple as to go with Cech, is it? I think we could have at least a half hour debate on this one.
Who are you going
Let's
for?
Let's not have
then?
A half hour debate. Give us your choice.
If you're asking me to choose between Cech and
no, I'm not asking you to choose between. I'm asking you to give us your choice.
Mignolet.
Simon Mignolet.
Yep.
Alison, has he persuaded you, or do you want to make a 15-second case for Cech?
It's the way he knew straight away and didn't have to pause. That's what's convinced me about Mignolet. Obviously, it's Petr Cech. I mean, Petr Cech is I think he dipped slightly last season. I think he's come back really strong this season and consistently one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Really unflappable. He made the save of the season at Stamford Bridge against Man United in the Cup. And he's dignified, sensible,
okay,
heartbeat of the team.
All that stuff.
No, it does matter. He organises them at the back. He's consistently making very good saves, rarely makes an error. and Chelsea have done well with him in goal all season.
This is what I was talking about, by the way. And he's so valued by the club that they're thinking of getting rid of him and replacing him with some 22-year-old from Atletico Madrid, who also happens to be Belgian, by the way, which is kind of weird because Belgium, of course, is a country of Tintin. Rory, has she persuaded you with a Czech argument? Are you really going to push Lloris? Because remember, all season long we've been saying Spurs are a one-man team and it's not Hugo who's the one man.
Hugo Lloris has slotted in perfectly to Premier League football. He has, I think he's made one substantial mistake.
Wasn't there some like 40-year-old geezer American guy keeping him out of the side earlier in the season?
Brad Friedel, yeah, but the way Villas-Boas managed that was very impressive. He sort of rotated them for a bit, eased Lloris in. I think Lloris is the very modern image of a very modern goalkeeper in the way that he plays on his 18-yard line. Petr Cech and David De Gea have both had good seasons. I'm not denying that at all. But for me, I would go with Lloris.
All right, the choice falls to Petr Cech because Alisson's argument was more persuasive, but largely because without Petr Cech, I don't think Chelsea finish in the Champions League. Without Hugo Lloris, then the wonderful Brad Friedel steps in, and it's no big deal. Also, the save of the season point, which I think was a very, very good one. And I think we're being a bit unfair when we judge Cech by what he used to be. But it is very close, admittedly. Right back, Rory.
Pablo Zabaleta.
Dicko.
Zabaleta.
Alisson.
Zabaleta.
All right, see, nice and easy.
Is Zabaleta, but my second choice, as I said to Dicko at Spurs yesterday, Sasha Rita at Fulham.
My second choice as well. Oh my God, we're agreeing on first choices and second choices.
Okay, nobody cares about Fulham, so let's move on.
My second choice is Gary Neville.
There you go. All right, left back. Dicko.
We're going to all say Leighton Baines, aren't we?
Yep.
Are you?
I am, but I could be persuaded to play Jan Vertonghen there out of position. But
no,
he might be.
No,
he doesn't want to play there.
No,
though.
But he might be.
Let's not do that to him.
He might be one of my central defenders. Okay, so Baines.
Baines. Central defenders, we will need two central defenders from you. You cannot say Thiago Silva because he does not play in the Premier League. Alisson.
I'm going for Vertonghen and Distan.
Ooh.
Nastasic and David Luiz.
Mr. Nasty and DL. All right, Dicko.
I am going for Vertonghen and Rafael Varane. No, I'm not allowed him, am I? I'm going Vertonghen and I'm going Nastasic.
Well, there you go. Two out of three wins it for Tongan and Mr. Nasty. Nicely done. Who was that pundit on Match of the Day who said that City didn't sign anybody significant this year?
Could have been either of them.
I'll tell you who it was. It was Aaron Shearer. Okay, so we have a midfield trio. So I think the best way to do this is if you guys give me all three of your midfielders in one go, and then we will sort through the carnage since Skinner is diligently writing everything down. Rory Kay.
Michael Carrick, Moussa Dembélé, and then I think it's probably Cazorla, but I could be persuaded to make it James McCarthy.
Wow. That's kind of bizarre because you mentioned my three. Which is obviously cheating. Dicko.
I'm going to go. I need a tackler, so I'm going to go Luiz in.
You can't do that. He's already been the defender. He's played most of his games in central defence, and he looks funny.
What do you mean I can't? Well, in that case, I'm going back to. I need to go back to my centre. Nastasic is out, and Luiz is. I need him in my team. I need his hair.
Let Luiz has played some games in central midfield.
Right, okay, you can have David Luiz in central midfield.
He's holding up the middle while I have. Mata and Cazorla float beautifully off the side.
Alisson?
I agree David Luiz has to be in the team of the year, so let's put him in midfield, and Mata has to be in the team of the year, and Bale has to be in the team of the year. So
I think we have
obvious.
Bale with the strikers.
Really? But we're not Rubble. How can you have Bale as a striker?
It's a 4-3-3 formation.
Okay. All right, well, I want Sean Maloney in then.
Come on, seriously.
Seriously, because how do you form your team of the season?
These what little play- tiny what midget players, who got on a relegated
player,
team, come on.
What player consistently makes you think, oh my goodness, every time he plays? And he did that.
He's like the third best midfielder on a team that's relegated.
No, he's not. He's a everything. He's wide, he's up front, he's behind, he's everywhere.
I agree that Maloney's been excellent this season, and I think it depends how you see the team of the year. If it's the 11 best players in the Premier League, then it's different to the players who have performed best for their level of ability.
I think you people are insane for not having Michael Carrick in there. Without Michael Carrick, yeah. United do not win the Premier League, full
what?
Stop.
No, what? You can't, no way. Did you see? I mean, he's had a decent season, but I mean, I'm still not buying this gushing over Carrick.
I'm not gushing over anything, but I'm saying, like, in terms of importance to the team. I mean, you take Michael Carrick out, I think you got a huge problem at United. Certainly more so than as great as Mata was. If Mata's not there for Chelsea, hey, that's all right. We still got Oscar, Hazard, Moses, you know, whatever the hell, Bertrand, Ramirez on the wing.
Yeah, but if you say, where's United's biggest area that they need to strengthen? Central midfield.
Yeah, because they need somebody to play with them.
No, who's the player? Who's no? I'm not buying it. He's had a decent season, but he's not in my team of the year.
No. All right. And we'll fire this under protest then and give a brownie point to Rory Keith.
So how are we settling it then?
We've settled it with David Luiz, Cazorla and Mata, because you foolishly selected Cazorla
instead of McCarthy,
so that forces Cazorla into the team. See?
Disappointed now. Were your three?
My three were, well,
Dembélé, Carrick and McCarthy.
It was Carrick and Dembélé, yeah. And McCarthy, I didn't really have a third. It was sort of marginal. I have a problem with the fact we're going to relegate it ultimately, so... All right, our three strikers, and this should be easy and straightforward, I would hope. Dicko.
That guy, Gareth Bale, I think should probably be in there. I guess that guy, Robin Van Persie, should be in there. And I'm guessing the biting Luis Suarez should be nibbling somewhere in there as well.
No love for Benteke, eh?
No, he's my unlucky one. He's and Michu as well. I mean, you know, we're leaving
and Lukaku,
out
Lukaku
and Hazard as well. I mean, there's some good players on the bench, but I think much as Suarez, he's got to be in the team.
Alison, you want to dispute that?
No, I agree with everything he said, and I just want to say Michu, because it's a shame he doesn't make the team of the season.
But then Michu did kind of switch off after February, so I think right. That kind of.
Well, Swansea did a bit. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
It's not his fault.
And Benteke kind of didn't switch on until a bit later on. So I think, yeah.
Lukaku's
been excellent.
He's super sub of the season.
Hazard actually, it's funny with Eden Hazard because he's kind of. He kind of plays in flashes. He's been amazing in certain moments in certain games, but there are other games when he looks like he's not that bothered. So I think, yeah, it has to be Bale, Suarez and Van Persie, doesn't it?
I agree with that. We should also, though, give a shout-out and our honourable mentions to one Mr. Lambert, who, you know, I really didn't think he would score so much in the top flight.
Oh, and since we're talking Southampton, in midfield, Schneiderlin. Really like Schneiderlin. Think he's excellent.
Yep.
All right, and this is the official game podcast team of the season. In goal from Chelsea, Petr Cech. At your right back, it's Pablo Zabaleta. At your left back, it's Leighton Baines, the pride of Merseyside, at least this season. In central defense, it's Jan Vertonghen. And Mattia Nastasic. In central midfield, David Luiz, Santi Cazorla, and Juan Mata. Up front, Robin Van Persie, Gareth Bale, and Luis Suarez. So not a single Englishman in this team. Well done.
Who are we having as manager?
I'm assuming, I'm going by the Tony Evans dictum, you know, we're not English, we're scouts, so that applies to Leighton Baines. As manager, should we do manager too? Why not? Rory, your nomination. I'm sure it's going to be somebody weird and not Sir Alex Ferguson.
Well, no, I mean, obviously it kind of has to be Fergie, but then that's not really interesting. So I think I might say Michael Laudrup.
Dicko.
We're playing 4-3-3. We're going all Cruyffian, so Laudrup's got the nicest, suits and hair and just general vibe, hasn't he? So, and I know Alison's positively in love with him. With leave her husband and children and cats and dogs to move in with him tomorrow. So I think that's going to be three votes.
And that's not below the belt. I don't know. Michael Laudrup.
Why don't you fire back and say that Dicko's going to leave his wife and kids to go and become Michael Laudrup's domestic partner?
I would definitely leave Houghton. No, I mean, yeah, there's got to be man love there, hasn't he?
He is dreamy, Michael Laudrup, yeah. No question.
The general rumour is that Laudrup does very little as well. He just sort of turns up and smiles and they all
looks
play
cool.
Better. Which is, you've got to be manager of the season if that's all you have to do.
I think you guys are all insane for not choosing Sir Alex Ferguson, but hey, I guess it's your call. So our manager of the season is Michael Laudrup, he who took his team to mid-table, roughly I think the same position as Brendan Rodgers the year before. But hey, he won the League Cup, which is so important. How did he do against Fulham on the last day of the season?
They were beaten 3-0.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. All right. But hey, he's very handsome, so let's go for him. Time now for some quick hits. Chelsea finished third and win the Europa League. Rafa Benitez is vindicated, as is, of course, the wise man who chose to appoint him, Roman Abramovich. But Alisson, I saw a rather softer, more diplomatic, gentler, less paranoid Rafa this season. Am I right? And might that have had something to do with his success?
It's strange. He actually has changed. He really has changed. When he was at Liverpool, which is when we saw him most previously to his Chelsea job. He didn't like the eye contact thing. He was very serious and on top of it all, and he was regarded a bit of a god, and that's how he acted. Whereas at Chelsea, it's as though someone who was like the most popular guy at school is suddenly not voted head boy, and he has to cope with that. And he's done it. He's done it by finding humour and humility and. He's just gracious and lovely now. It's almost like I sometimes wonder, is it him? Is it really the same bloke?
Or maybe just somebody wearing a Rafa suit.
Maybe.
Who knows? Sir Alex Ferguson signs off with a 5-5 draw at West Bromwich Albion. Dicko, we haven't had you on since the news hit that the great man is leaving us. Do you want to share your favorite memory of the now former Manchester United boss or perhaps some other little snippet which might be entertaining for the next 25 seconds or so?
Memory I've most relived, boring my mates, is when he pinned me up against a wall and screamed Glaswegian nastiness in my face. The favourite memory, I did have a very, very nice lunch. Me and one other journalist spent about 2 hours with him. He was the most compelling, brilliant, fantastic, enthralling company. And the great sadness is that he didn't think that was important enough to repeat most weeks. Compelling.
So you're annoying that he didn't have lunch with you most weeks.
Well, the great shame, while one of the reasons journalists got so bitter and twisted about the fact that he wouldn't do press conferences is because he's so damn good at them. I mean, he's, we wanted that access because he's such a large, fascinating, massive personality.
Well, can you just tell us very quickly, what did you do to have him pin you against the wall? What did you write lies about him?
No, it was snuck down to the training ground. The days when we could actually crawl. This is how sort of demeaning the job was. We'd sort of crawl in, hiding behind cars, even hang around among the autograph hunters, pretending that we were autograph hunters, and then wait for a player to sort of sidle down the line and sign in them and go, Steve Bruce. And they'd sort of try and interview them while they were signing autographs. I was down there one day, and Andrei Kanchelskis told me and another journalist that he fancied a transfer. He said, I want out, I'm leaving, ring my agent, who then confirmed it. So oddly enough, we thought that was a story worth putting in the paper.
Wow. So this was young Dicko. This was some time ago.
Oh, this is when I had hair.
This is Dicko. This is when you had your long flowing locks. Brilliant.
It is. I had my Tony Hadley standout ballet flick. But anyway, a perfectly true story sourced by a player and his agent. But it obviously didn't quite suit, furious Andrei Kanchelskis last night, put in a transfer request, etc. Didn't suit the Fergie agenda. So we were banned.
There you
banned.
Go.
Banned for the truth. Outrageous.
Speaking of West Brom, who we touched upon earlier, they finished eighth, best of the rest in the Premier League, despite a new manager in the summer. And they got the best out of Romelu Lukaku, whose 17 league goals were more than any Chelsea player this season, and more than twice as many as one Fernando Torres. Rory, would Lukaku have scored as much had he stayed at Stamford Bridge? And should we be appreciating West Brom a bit more than we have?
It's hard with West Brom because they have had an awful second half of the season, which I suppose is kind of natural and you can't really blame them for it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're best of the rest. I think Everton are best of the rest, aren't they? I mean, that's the mid-table starts at sixth.
Everton aren't really part of the rest.
No, I mean, it's Everton a good side, but I would say that the league, there's a top five. And then
there isn't. You look at the league table, Everton are not the rest. There's a big gap.
Fine. Okay. Well done, West Brom. Shame you didn't keep it up a little bit more. Lukaku obviously wouldn't have scored as much at Stamford Bridge because he wouldn't have played as much. And I would say that it would be very much in his career best interest not to spend next season at Chelsea either.
Depends who the manager is at Chelsea.
No, but I think
if I'm the manager, I'm starting Lukaku every game at Chelsea.
The thing is, with a player like
Lukaku, Mourinho's not been appointed yet.
Lukaku, what, you think you might be in with a shot?
Why not?
It's possible. Why not?
Why not?
We don't have another hour.
I'm younger than Mourinho.
You are younger and more charismatic.
I might dispute that, but
I would say with a player like Lukaku, same with Andy Carroll, that model of forward, the big powerhouse centre forward, needs to play regularly to get into that rhythm. I don't think Lukaku works well if he's in sort of once every three games. It would be in his best interest to spend another year on loan. Maybe a slightly high, maybe somewhere like Everton.
Why didn't he start every game at West Brom?
You'd have to ask Steve Clark. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
I think that's enough Lukaku for now. I remember a big, strong powerhouse of a centre forward starting all the time under Jose Mourinho, and his name was Didier Drogba. I don't get Stoke. I don't understand the team. I don't understand the way they play. I don't understand this business with a pig's head trashing Michael Owen's car, or Kenwyn Jones deciding that he was going to break all of the windows in Glenn Whelan's car because he blamed him for the pig's head in his locker. And then he goes on Twitter and says, "Now I accept he didn't do it. Why? Because he told me so." I think it's all a giant weird world that I don't understand. Alison, you're probably best placed to answer this. Is this just boys' pranks getting out of hand? Or is some of this kind of the responsibility of the manager, maybe?
I like Stoke. I like Tony Pulis. I don't think it's very important if there are pranks at a club. I think what the whole incident with the pig's head...
I think
the whole incident with the pig's head and the windscreen shows more about the fact that Kenwyn Jones's career has sort of gone... And he's a frustrated chap, and maybe Pulis hasn't handled that side of it well enough for him to not publicly display his how upset he is. But I don't think if someone mucks about with a pig's head, it's the end of the world and they're a badly run club and Tony Pulis is losing his grip at all. I don't think you can infer that. I think Stoke have had a slightly disappointing season, but they're still in the Premier League, and he's a great manager and it's a great club.
Paul Scholes, Jamie Carragher, David Beckham, Michael Owen, Steve Harper all ride into the sunset. Gary Neville preceded them. Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Frank Lampard, and Ashley Cole are still around, as is Stephen Gerrard. Dicko, I'm sure you have some profound thoughts on the golden generation and this perception that they are big failures.
Individually, they're not. And I've got a lot of fond memories of them as individual players. I guess collectively, I'm still stuck in 2006 in a hotel in Baden-Baden, hearing all sorts of gossip about them, bitching about each other, just about the whole dysfunction in that last sort of tournament with which they're associated. And so collectively, I left with a big sort of profound sense of disappointment. Individually, they've all achieved quite a lot. In England, it never happened, and that's a big, big, complicated story that I'm not going to be able to sum up in 25 seconds.
Manchester City lose their last game of the season at home to Norwich, but at least they're closer to appointing a new manager, who we all understand will be one Manuel Pellegrini. Rory, I'm sure you love the guy because he's South American and sophisticated, so I won't ask you about him. But just tell me, if you were the little birdie perched on his shoulder, what are three things that you would tell him to sort out in double quick time?
The first one would be to, I'm going to say, heal the rifts in the dressing room, but really I mean curtail the arrogance and power of a group of players who have become too convinced of their own importance. Second, I would say, is get Vincent Kompany and Yaya Toure performing well again. Maybe get both of them to slim down a little bit. They look too muscular, a little bit off the pace. And the third is infuse a little bit of either a little bit of magic or kind of a coherent system to a good squad that doesn't necessarily seem to gel that well together on the pitch. That would be my three things. And Dab, one for you. The managerial merry-go-round, trademark all newspapers, is about to kick off. How are things unfolding, which doesn't continue the metaphor?
And there you go. I mean, I'm happy for Letty to use that wonderful stereotype merry-go-round. It's all about cliches, isn't it, Rory?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're reading a script written by me. Carlo Ancelotti has he's basically told the Paris Saint-Germain that he wants to leave. There may be some compensation to be paid if he goes. He's on the shortlist for Real Madrid. I imagine he will get the job. The current Real Madrid manager, of course, Jose Mourinho, he could be on his way to Chelsea and there will be a lot of compensation to be paid unless they reach some kind of agreement and both give up money, which I don't see really happening. Your mate, Rafa Benitez, of course, who Mourinho would be replacing at Chelsea, he's on his way. A lot of interest from Napoli. The current Napoli manager has been there for 4 years, Walter Mazzarri. He could be going to Roma, and he came out and he said, hey, look, 4 years is a very long time at a football club. I don't think any manager should stick around more than 4 years. One day I'll send him a Sir Alex Ferguson DVD. Speaking of Sir Alex Ferguson, of course, he's gone. He'll be replaced by David Moyes. Unclear who will replace Moyes at Everton. Many people hope it will be Roberto Martinez. And I told you about Mazzarri before. He could be going to Roma, or it could be Massimiliano Allegri leaving Milan, which would be an idiotic reason would be idiotic of Milan to let him go at this stage, but could be a pivot at Roma after they play the Coppa Italia final against Lazio next week. Finally, Diego Simeone is staying on at Atletico Madrid. Some uncertainty about Tito Villanova because he, of course, has his cancer treatment, and it's unclear whether they might get him some help. Luis Enrique has been mentioned. Luis Enrique, of course, has been mentioned for a whole range of jobs, including Paris Saint-Germain. And, of course, that's the other big job, and that's where Mourinho might end up if he doesn't go to Chelsea, but nobody really believes that will happen. Pep Guardiola is replacing Jupp Heynckes at Bayern Munich, but you knew that.
Paris Saint-Germain, the list apparently also includes Fabio Capello.
Yeah, Fabio Capello always putting himself forward when there is money to be had. I really don't think Capello will be the next PSG manager. I'd be shocked if that happened. Shocked, I tell you. That's it for this week. That's it for this year. That's it for this season. It's been fun. Thanks to my guests, Alison Rudd, Matt Dickinson, Rory K. Smith, and of course, in past episodes, Stuart Robson, Tony Cascarino, Peter Lansley, James Ducker, Oliver Kay. Do I really have to go through all of them? Julian Lawrence, Pedro Pinto, George Culkin.
Barrett.
Tony Barrett, Tony Evans, Clive Petty.
Did you mention the Fink?
The Fink.
Yes, Daniel Finkelstein. Matt Hughes, our Lord and Master. That's it, right? That is every. If we forgot you, it's because we don't appreciate you and we don't find you memorable. We're all on Twitter, so you can hit us up there and share our thoughts. Rory especially likes to engage in long debates on finer Luis Suarez-related points on Twitter. You can also email us, as so many of you do each week, at gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. Skinner will be checking that mailbox all summer long. You can go to thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your views, your web chat, that's blogs and analysis. You'll also find us on Twitter. Big thank you again to Chris Skinner, who puts up with our BS every week and sometimes makes us sound semi-coherent in the finished product. Big thank you also to Ped Hunter, who replaces Skinner when he's busy training for triathlons or other some such. Skinner's looking at his watch. That can only mean one thing. Till next season. Bye-bye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.